Good afternoon. It's 3:17 p.m. on July 22nd, 2013. This is a Wuzhou to bring everybody up to speed on a bunch of different subjects, including our ALTA reports, and I'll go into that right off the bat here. We are going to be releasing an ALTA report. We're labeling this one August of 2013. We're using a written format. We're using our old data processing methods, which are a little bit more time intensive. So it will, thus the delays. We've also been concerned with the Cindy Lou effect that I'd mentioned in the article that I'd put on the Half Past Human site. And we've had a number of run-ins with the increasing problems of the data holes and the internet warfare. All of this, all of these elements have contributed to a delay in our processing, and we've missed the month of July, but that was okay for us because we've had to redo things in order to be able to survive here under the current economic situations that we've got going. And so I'll go into those, and I'll go into the ALTA report structure here in just a second. Okay, so about the ALTA reports, let's start with the Cindy Lou effect. This effect is basically the same kind of effect that we used to use in our propagation studies when I was doing those initially in the 94 through... Actually, I think we finally finished up in about 2003 or 2004. But a propagation study is where I wanted to know what the emotional import and the carry value were for particular kinds of words, as well as other numeric indicators of emotional response to a phrase or word usage. And so I would put these on forums and see how far they would propagate out, thus the name, the propagation studies. And you'd put them on one forum, and you would, in a particular area, so you'd put a particular statement in, say, a gardening forum that you knew was a feeder site for other forum, and then you'd just follow and see how far out that phrase went and the emotional import and how it carried and so on. Well, the Cindy Lou effect is basically a conscious direction propagation study that's never ending. A perpetual propagation study is they get all wrapped up in their own spiraling in on the supposed results that are being seen by the methods employed. And the methods employed are deterministic, so they will find what you tell them to look for. We run in a serendipitous mode, so we're actually looking for stuff we tell it not to find. In a curious way. I mean, a funny way to put it. But in any event, so the Cindy Lou effect is real. Since I first wrote the essay, I've now been contacted by several fellow travelers. Several is defined as more than three, less than 11. And a fellow traveler in this sense is defined as somebody who is actively involved in fringe level linguistics or advanced linguistic thinking. And so these include competitors, as well as people working for some of our competitors, as well as people that are exploring other forms of linguistic evolution via the internet. And so would have also been affected by the Cindy Lou effect. Anyway, so these fellow travelers have told me that, well, one of them said that he'd recognized the opportunity presented by putting out a deterministic word counting program in a similar fashion to what George Ure's been playing with. And he decided not to because of the impact it would have on his own primary work, because he also had been running propagation studies and was aware of the self-reinforcing nature that those can have for somebody that's unaware of the nature of the technology they're using and thus thinks, you know, they're actually seeing something, you know, words from their god, this kind of thing. So anyway, he decided not to put it out there because he recognized that, yeah, there was some small monetary potential there, but it would totally destroy his primary business. And then I've also been in contacted by some people that are organization employees for corporate competitors, who also, one of the corporate guys, well, apparently one of the big guys, was going to do something similar to that, similar to a self-directed Google Trends kind of a deal. And they wisely decided not to, because one of their employees pointed out to them the circuitous nature of what they were doing and how it would be self-reinforcing and would all blow up real quick anyway. But in the meantime, it was going to pollute their own and everybody else's trends data. This company was also a, that's their primary business, is selling trend information. And they do very well at it. So this is something that we've come to in terms of our situation relative to the Alta reports. We've had escalating costs. My poor paranoid mad henchman here, Igor, is rapidly running out of the few mustache hairs he has left to chew on just because of the continuing problems in punching holes through the denial of service attacks and other forms of internet warfare. So that's been a real problem for us. We've had increasing costs, and then we've discovered just how egregiously we've been assaulted by what we're going to call large corporations. And so it just really irritated me. I hated running into the Cindy Lou effect. That's a problem. We think, by the way, that we, in discussing this with one of the fellow travelers, I actually think I've tumbled into a way that may allow us to at least know that it's present and be able to predict when the data is getting too dirty to use. And so we're going to start looking for that. And I've got poor Igor, who has just, you know, only a few mustache hairs left, working on some refinement of some scripts I've written towards that effect. And we'll see how quickly we can get something up and running that would give us a little indicator that Cindy Lou is out there and causing problems with some software that we know will be released. Now, at the moment, you know, the pending release of the George Yours software there was a real issue for us. But he's not alone. There are other people out there doing the same deterministic word counting kind of go and scope out this forum or this news site kind of software. And they're starting to focus in on what I call the Cindy Lou market or the prophecy market. And so it will occur. We're trying to engineer around it. In the meantime, we're also running our data sets as fast as we can, and thus poor Igor has very few mustache hairs left because we're working his little mustache to the bone as we try and store as much data as possible in as wide a ranging feed as possible. We run into an interesting situation here. Whereas we used to have, literally used to get 100 million reads and throw out 90% or greater, sometimes as high as 99% of them, in order to retain that 1% that was had been passed through the filtering, we're now doing a lot of our filtering ahead of time in the process of doing the IP punching, just to make sure that we're going to a lot of trouble, that the area we're going to will be worth it, trying to maintain these IP connections against some of these ravaging net wars is a real issue. So we don't want to waste our time on areas that are less productive for us. Thus, we've altered some of the processing, shifted some of the processing ahead of time, when we used to do it in a batch format, we would just do it in a different way. Now we're doing it in a near real-time fashion. And I've shifted some of it so that we're getting less reads, but they're all of a consistently higher quality, so we're throwing out fewer. And so our retention rate is very much higher than it used to be. Basically, what we've done is sort of flop the whole thing to where we're reading in about a tenth of what we used to, but out of that tenth, we're keeping maybe 90% in some cases. So in some cases only 1%, but still a very high percentage in a lot of areas. So we're racking up some considerably good-sized bins and collections of data. This being the case, and the way in which we're doing the immediacy data versus shorter-term versus longer-term data sets now is open to a bit more flexibility, because we're no longer doing any form of batch processing, nor are we trying to deal with the immediacy data flood at the post-processing or post-gathering processing level. Tedious to understand, but basically what it allows is that the the weighted average of the immediacy data versus shorter term versus longer term, to some small extent, can be controlled as we go along. And thus we expect, and that's a big E and a, followed by a question mark and a lot of good thoughts, we expect to have a higher grade of accuracy with a lower total overall data set. So that's really the net result of that technical diversion, is that we're going to have less data, but we expect it to be at a, of a higher quality, so we expect to be more accurate. We'll find this out as we go along. Now here's a, now we need to get back into our egregious offender issue. Here's our real problem. Had we been paid for all of the reports that we've produced at $10 per copy, we would not be in the financial straits that we are now. If it was, and then I'm talking about just the reports that were stolen from us, not the ones we gave away for free. So we were always giving away three or four times the amount for free that we're being paid for. And that can't continue. And in fact, it has ceased. We're not going to give away reports for free anymore. And we've had to do some really hard thinking about how we approach this. Because of the cost here, because of the cost of maintaining and scrubbing the database, because of the rising cost everywhere and the falling value of the money, we've hit some serious walls, and we know we're going to be hit by some even more serious ones as a lot of our hardware fails, just because it do and the stuff wears out. So in order for us to even be able to think about continuing, we've made some decisions, increased our storage levels so that we can store our data set that we're gathering now, with the intention of being able to continue to produce reports on it even after we discover that the Cindy Lou effect has come on in, because we can go back and re-examine those parts of the data set that were left unexamined in previous interpretations. You know, you can't read it all in your first go-through. And in fact, on some, if we get a large enough set, we might be able to produce three or four reports. I don't know about five, but certainly three and possibly four reports off of a good-sized data set. In the past, we were always worried about the data going stale, so we would always dump the data and go on to the next gathering. Now we're able to do things in a different fashion because we've run up against the pressure of the Cindy Lou effect. And so this new method is going to produce different results, but we do think that we're back to the old 2003 style weighting with longer term, shorter term, and immediacy data. Now, here's our issue. Again, back to the issue of payment. Had we been paid for the thousands of copies that were circulated illegally in corporations, we would not be in a situation that we're in now. And so we've decided that what we're going to do is the following. We're going to sell this via the internet, and we're going to deliver it via the internet via email. That presents all kinds of problems for us. This whole process is going to raise all of our cost and the aggravation in releasing reports, but we simply cannot continue otherwise. We'll just shut down if this doesn't work. But here's the situation. We know for a fact that there's a number of corporations where there were hundreds, if not thousands, of illegal copies of our report in circulation, and that were read by many, 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 many people repeatedly off of network servers, and that these copies were put there by employees of those large corporations. And so this is a violation of our copyright. Because of the way that copyright law works, we are going to demand that such corporations pay a corporate license, rather than get free use of our work for their for a $10 payment for, you know, potentially thousands of people reading it. So under the circumstances, in order to accommodate this and make it work, here's the method that we've chosen to approach this with. What we're going to do is this. A, no more free copies. If we decide to release any of this information for free, it will be so far in the future, you might as well forget about waiting for it. It'll just pop out, you know, 5-6 months from now if we decide that's the route that's going to happen. So all copies will be paid for. Plus, all copies are going to be tracked in our own server software, so that if we see someone discussing our work, which we have to filter out anyway, and we're able to peg an email address to it, and they're not a purchaser of our product, we're going to get very upset. Three, what we're going to do here is we're going to invite explicitly corporations to apply for a corporate license. And then we're going to tell everybody, including employees of those corporations, here is the situation. Should we release, after we release this report, if we find that there is a copy of our report on any of your servers or any of your software in your cloud or on your VPN or any one of your corporate networks, we will sue the absolute shit out of you the way that patent trolls try. We will succeed. And here's how we will succeed. Because I'm going to invite out-of-work attorneys to patrol corporations that we call large corporations, which are going to be defined in a statement on our Alta description, which will be posted later today or tomorrow. And we're going to invite out-of-work attorneys to patrol the corporations next to you. So, hey, you live in New York City, and you're an attorney, and you're registered to press suits in that state on the behalf of clients. Well, if you're out of work and you don't have anything to do, wander on into J.P. Morgan, wander on into Bank of America, go on up to their library, see if you can locate a copy of our software that's on one of their machines and the date it was placed there, or not our software, but our report, and then give us a contact us here at Half Past Human, and put in there that you've found an egregious offender, and we'll negotiate with you for contingency. And you'll be, we'll set up a contingency contract, and you can sue the fuckers for us. And we're going to be very, very, very diligent about this. Because we are basically, it's a do-or-die situation. So we either make the corporations pay, or basically it's a go-bust sort of a deal. And so we've set corporate licenses really damn high to reflect how valuable it is to those corporations based on what we've been able to determine in these past few months from some whistleblowers that within those corporations. And further, let me point something out. If you are an employee of one of the large corporations that we define as such, and you buy a personal use copy, you had better inform us ahead of time that you are an employee of that corporation. Because if we should find out that that corporation ends up with a copy on their equipment anywhere, and we can connect you to that corporation, we will sue you as well at a personal level for placing it there, even if we can't eliminate you as the perpetrator. We will sue all of the employees that purchased a copy for being a copyright thief, and we'll try and get the maximum level of penalty that the nasty legal system here in the United States will allow. And bear in mind, this will not cost us anything, because there are tons of attorneys out there that have no work and would love to take on a contingency patent troll kind of case against Bank of America or some other deep pocket organization. And we will be quite happy to vet the attorney and then, sign the contract for a very generous contingency and say, y'all rope them steers and bring them on into the corral. And we will do so. We will also do this with the egregious offenders that are also parts of the U.S. government. Okay, the Federal Reserve, as well as federal employees that read this off of federal servers, are also on notice that if we can locate your email address as one of the purchasers, and you work for one of these corporations, and you did not tell us ahead of time that you were buying it for yourself, and you're going to swear you're not going to put it on their machines, then we will not absolve you, and we will include your name in this lawsuit that will be brought against your corporation. And also bear in mind, if you are a reader of ours and you work for one of these large corporations and you do buy a personal copy that you do not put on your corporate machine, but you find a corporate copy out there, hey, we can keep a secret. I like whistleblowers. We've got a good relationship with them. There's lots of ways that karma can flow back to them. So keep that in mind. Basically, this is a statement of intent to pursue copyright violators via whatever legal recourse we may have, and we're defining all of the big pockets, deep pockets, as the ones we're going to go after first, because they're the most egregious offenders here. So we will set a very high price on for a corporate license, and we will refuse to be bullied by these bastards. And if we can't arrive to a satisfactory conclusion of negotiations, then I'll just sit back. because I know they're going to thieve from us, and I also know that there's a lot of out-of-work attorneys that would just love to take on a case against one of these guys where they've got everything going for them, in terms of our documentation and our support and all of this sort of deal in terms of how we're approaching this. So, corporate purchasers, be advised. If you want to read this, if you've read it on your corporate networks in the past, you'd better contact your local department heads. If you want to read it again, have them listen to this message or read the notice on our site and purchase a corporate license. We're doing this ahead of the release of the product. So when we release the product, we're going to put linguistic telltales, linguistic watermarkers in each and every copy that will be tied. Each and every email ID going out will receive a separately, slightly different version of the product at some level that we will be able to identify without any kind of problem. We're taking a clue here from Getty. And all the other people with their copyright issues, and they're really they're egregious offenders too, by the way. But with their approach towards aggressive copyright enforcement, and so we're going to mark all of the copies. So they're going to be delivered via email with this mark included, and so we will be able to match email IDs to copies that go out. And if that copy shows up on a corporate server somewhere this is really what saves all the other employees for these large corporations, is that if we can find out which copy got there first, we'll be able to say, hey, so-and-so is the one we're going to name in the suit as the personal thief that provided, you know, JP Morgan, Bank of America, other big fucking corporation to be named here, with a illegal copy that several thousand people read from, and we're going to try and achieve the maximum possible return. I will tell you this up front, in our lawsuits. And so the attorneys will be instructed certain ways in terms of how to approach this, and we will go for the maximum possible penalty per potential read off of the servers, and we will subpoena the hell out of your IT department to get clock counts so that we've got an accurate record of your entire server use of our report on your server. We've prepared all of our documents already ahead of the release of the report. We know how to subpoena records that will clamp down on you the minute we find out about this. You don't believe me. You don't want to have me come on in and do a proctology exam on your IT department. When I was doing IT security, I discovered some holes in corporations and government that had been there for years and had passed several times through professional sweeps, and yet I was able to discover them in network monitoring and shut down some really nasty situations. And we're talking long-term backdoors that have been put in by professional crackers, so I know what the hell I'm doing. So I will come on in and I will do a proctology exam on your IT department. And I understand that a threat perceived is a threat received. But in this case, let's substitute the word promise. I promise you that I have nothing to lose by sicking as many out-of-work attorneys on your case as I possibly can in as many different jurisdictions as I possibly can. I stand nothing to lose whatsoever. And this is not a nuisance suit. This is an attempt to control the egregious offensive theft by large corporations who are being put on notice both by this audio message as well as by the written message that's going to appear on the Half Past Human site. And so, anyway, the Half Past Human site will have a method for people to apply to be included in this release of the next report. If you do so, if you apply as an individual for a personal use copy, be advised that we want your email address. We're going to tie it to that copy. And I don't really want to go this route. I don't really care about people. I don't care about their names, what they do for a living, or any of that sort of thing. But if you do work for one of these large corporations, as defined in our site there, then you'd better tell us ahead of time that you do so and swear in your email you're not going to release it to them. Otherwise, we'll just include you in the course of the lawsuit, and you know the lawsuits will occur because you know they're thieving from us. So, that having been said, we're going to set our prices. There will not be a free copy on the report. We will attempt to control and eliminate Cindy Lou effect by shutting down the data set as soon as we know that we've spotted it or suspect we've spotted it, and let everybody know ahead of time in any reports that that may be the case. And we're going to release the report in August, delivered via email. Now, this last element on delivery. If you give us an email address that we can't reach because we get bounce backs, the onus is on you to contact us to say you did not receive your report and it was paid for under such and such an email address. And we may have to send to you from some other domain other than Half Past Human to route it through the corporate denial of service attacks as well as those corporations that ban our material on their across their networks. So there's that. And so this whole process will engender a lot of extra screwing around and a lot of extra cost. And we've had to fix all our cost to reflect this. So it's increased in cost. Also, they're driving the value of the money down. So we had to do something anyway. Poor Igor, you know, can't afford even any mustache wax. Not that he could use it. Two hairs left. There wouldn't be any point. But in any event, so we're going to set a new pricing structure. We'll deliver via email in small batches, with each batch going out with individual encoded linguistic watermarks for later on prosecution of egregious against our egregious thievers, the reavers, and we'll see if this works. If it doesn't, we may try one other alternative that we've thought of, but. You know, it's getting close to cutting into the bone here, so, which I refuse to do. We'll just go off and do something else. Anyway, so that's where we stand there. The report will probably go out, say, before the 10th of August. It's going to depend on how much, extra fiddling around. We will release it, ahead of the, next round of, forecast, financial things in there, because they're so pertinent to everybody, and they're going to have a very large impact on the population as a whole. So at some point we may even just say that, okay, we're going to release now, and any applications that come on in after this are processed on a individual basis as they arrive, and they can just wait while we deal with the other issues in sending them out. Sorry about the problems. It's just the way it's got to be. It's if we could think of some other way to do it that didn't involve mailing things through the U.S. Postal Service, we would take that approach. It is just, I mean, it's truly egregious to find out that you produce what you thought was about 2,600 copies, most of which were given away free, and then to find out that two organizations alone accounted for over 6,000 copies. I mean, that's you know, greater than our production level several times. And it was just a huge hit. Especially since we've run into all these issues with failing money or failing equipment and need the money for it and all of that kind of stuff. So anyway, that's the situation with the reports. We'll be putting those out before the 10th of August. I have a little reason to try and aim for the 1st of August. We'll see if we can make it. If you want to send in applications to be part of this group, hang off until I've got, as a personal user, please wait a day or so. I plan to have the accounting mechanism for both Bitcoin and PayPal and Amazon payments set up and in place by Saturday of this week, which is the 27th. So you'll have a couple of days to get in there ahead of time. It's no worries. We're not going to release on the 1st of August anyway. Very doubtful. So it's not a big problem. The immediacy data being weighted the way it is, we're not overrunning any of the data sets in releasing this way. And so that's and basically what it amounted to is, you know, these too big to fail. They're just too big to carry anymore, you know. It's just too much of a burden to support them economically without making them pay their fair share. So we're going to just set it that way and see how it goes. And if they pay, maybe we can keep in business here. Now, a couple of things, just different topics here. We've got a bunch of new endeavors going. I've got a new, making a mold for a new invention that we're going to be presenting to some people next month. To see how they like it. They may decide to take it, in which case maybe I can keep one of my vegetables employed here, keep kale going through the winter doing this kind of stuff with this new product. We're getting the proa done, so we're, boy, if we keep on schedule here, we'll be putting hatches in on the 6th, and then I've got to go down on the 7th or 8th and pick up of August and pick up the first yurt. But then we'll be back to doing the painting and everything on the proa with the intent of getting into the water by the end of August, all rigged out, ready to go. We have a lot of stuff to do. We have to cast the specialized, another new invention, cast the rudder control unit that I've designed. I've got the rudders built. The foils are great. They're getting their last coat of resin and finished coat of resin and glass beads and stuff now, and they're all set, so we just need to make the cast out the control mechanism that holds the foils, and then the control mechanism that holds the crane that lifts the sprit rig, also known as an advanced crab claw. So we have some parts we have to cast, and we got a lot of measurements and this kind of thing to do as well. So it's not like there aren't several thousands of tasks to get done before we can even put the boat in the water, as well as, you know, putting in all the stuff that's required by law, all the lights and the, you know, all the horns and all this kind of crud, right? And lifesavers and, or life vests and so on. So that, you know, we have it all, so we can get it done fairly rapidly. But, anyway, so we're making progress, and we should have that in by the, end of August, so sea trials will be through September, so it seems unlikely we'll be able to do the Port Townsend thing in this September, simply because I've got this other new potential for some work here that may keep the vegetable going longer, which would be really cool. And it would generate some income for us, you know, I'm not opposed to that, especially since we're trying to relocate and do some other stuff. We're also going to do a demo. Kale and I and a couple of guys I know and are going to build this heating system for the house we're in now, and one I also intend to employ with the yurts, that extracts about between 50 and 80% of your heating cost from the earth with basically a small... you can do it with a computer fan. You can do a little tiny 12-volt fan. That's your only electrical cost, your only energy cost. And it's an air tunnel, an air heat exchange tunnel. And so basically what you do is you dig a big trench with a couple of plenum at either end and put pipe in it and various different things to control the moisture and the insects and this sort of deal. But you have about 100 feet of pipe buried between 4 and 6 feet down in our area here. So we're going to bury ours about 5 feet. And it'll provide a constant temperature to the air inside the pipe of about 55 to 60 degrees. So we'll... always have that. If it's 90 degrees outside, you'll be able to run that little fan and pump in very cool air. If it's 30 degrees outside, you'll be able to run that fan and pump in reasonably warm air, 20 to 30 degrees warmer than the outside air. Of course, you know, if it's 55 degrees outside and your air temperature is 55 degrees coming out of the tube, it doesn't do you a whole lot of good. You know, unlike a broken watch, this thing is sort of wrong at a particular temperature twice a day, that sort of a deal. But they're very, extremely cost effective. It's a really an old Roman and, or Turkish invention. It can be married to if you use a terracotta pipe and stuff, it can be married to any number of systems that run alongside it, so that you can also extract, heat or put heat into it, that kind of a deal. So for instance, they used to have a, hot air, piping and plenum situation that sort of siphoned excess heat off of the heating of the water in some of these ancient Roman baths, and they would then run the hot air to dry saunas in other parts of the building, and the cross connect was reasonably small, and so on. So we're exploring some of these ancient technologies for what we call, you know, the low-hanging fruit, the minimal capital investment for the maximum long-term return without the requirement of any additional energy. On these systems here, you can put a fan in at either end. It's better to have the fan on the ductwork and everything on the receiving end for a lot of different reasons, but control among them, so you can just turn it on and turn it off very close. They can move some considerable temperature differences from the ground into your house. Depending on the volume of cubic volume of your house, you may need greater than 100 feet. We figure about 106 feet here would be more than adequate to supply both the house we're in now, and even divert some to a dome or to a yurt if we had set one up here. In other words, we'd be able to supply two structures off the same plenum and run the excess heat in the wintertime into the dome. And this is a really good savings if you've got a greenhouse, because in some areas, for instance, I know some places where it freezes down 17 or 18 feet. If you've got the ability to dig down deeper than that, you can reach temperatures that will exceed the level of the frozen ground by 45 degrees. Because that's the base temperature you'll be dealing with at about 24 feet if your freezing limit is, normal frozen ground limit is 17 feet. So at that level, you've got 45 degree temperature that you can constantly vent into your greenhouses at basically no cost, because it will rise. It'll want to rise. But you might need some considerable volume in pipe, unless you can get some terracotta pipe. And that, of course, involves greater expense. The easiest way to do it is with a heavy, thick plastic drain pipe or a cement. Cement's really good, but the issue with the cement is you need to make it so that it's non-porous. You need to make sure that it is a cement-coated, Portland cement-coated, non-porous concrete pipe, not a drain pipe or a culvert pipe. Those won't work because of the penetration of the moisture. You'll get potential molds and all of this kind of problem, and you don't want those. It's real easy to engineer around those, but if you get the wrong material to start, you're screwed, especially since you've got 100 plus feet of it buried in the ground. It'll be a bitch to replace it if you discover you've got the wrong stuff later on. They're very easily done. The technology is several thousands of years old. And we're going to build one here as soon as certain things occur. So we're thinking, actually, we'll probably end up doing it in the rainy season here, which is any day now. But we'll probably end up doing this in September after we've done our first shake it to break it run on the PROA. Then we'll come on back and do some things around here. Kale and myself and maybe the other vegetable, lettuce. And then during that time, we'll build in one of these systems and put it in place, and we'll track it through the winter and show you what its performance is. The goal is not to get 100% of your heat out of this, bear in mind. It's to get 55 to 80% of your heat or cooling virtually free. And so you're only heating that temperature difference from, you know, 55 to 72 or whatever it is, 68, whatever you prefer. You only have to heat from there as opposed to from 32 degrees if you have a insulated house and this kind of a deal. And for the cost, in terms of the cost effectiveness and the length of time it can run, undisturbed, no input because there's no moving parts other than your fan, it truly even beats most forms of solar for a very little cost. But it will not and cannot be expected to provide all your heat, but rather just to provide that base level or your cooling. Now, it really shines in the cooling section. Let me divert there for a second. Most air conditioners work off of reducing moisture in the air to chill the air by condensing out the water vapor. And in the process, it makes you feel cooler as they blow this chilled air across you. In effect, though, you are limited to their, an air conditioner's effectiveness is limited to the amount of moisture that can possibly be removed from the air in the room in which it's operating under the conditions it's operating. So air conditioners have a known potential level of efficiency, which is hardly ever achieved because you'd have to be in a perfect environment for that. But the most probable output from any form of air conditioning is about a 15 degree difference maximum with the ambient air, given a reasonable humidity and moisture content. So that 15 degrees would be 15 degrees off of 85 to get you the 70, or if you're in the 90, well, you're only going to get 15 degrees off of the 90, so you're down to you're not going to get it down to 70 then. If it's up at 100, you're only going to get 15 degrees off of 100. If it's 120, you're only going to get 15 degrees off of 120. You're not going to get a situation where an air conditioner will take you from 120 degrees ambient air down to 70 degrees interior air without a huge investment in electricity costs far and above the normal level of air conditioning use. Now, all of that being said, the reason I'm saying it is, here's the deal. If you're living in an area where it's 120 degrees, and you have the, as a standard, you know, kind of a potential for summer temperatures, or even 100 degrees summer temperatures, and you're in the sort of the reverse situation as the people up north where they have the deep freezes. You have a deep heat penetration, but if you can get below that deep heat penetration, now it's not quite as bad as the freezing potential, because that's a moisture in the soil issue. But, and heating usually drives the moisture out of the soil, which limits the heat to 9 or 10 feet down. And so you only need to go usually about, say 11 to 20 feet down, in order to obtain the, or get close to a maximum delta in your region, between ambient air and the lower internal soil temperature. But that internal soil temperature might truly be 40 degrees difference. It might be a constant 55 degrees. And so if you're at 95 degrees, you've got a 45 degree air temperature difference, and you can pump out that air temperature all day long for the cost of the little fan. And the higher the air temperature goes, the greater the difference between the two, because your ground temperature will be reasonably constant throughout this entire period. So even if your air temperature went to 120, you're still going to be pumping out 55 degree air out of your cooling system buried in the ground. And you, again, based on cubic volume and how much you're going to pump out and so forth, you may need multiple ones of these lines running throughout your yard, or, you know, several hundred feet out under the ground, or you may want to wrap them. I know of one guy who discovered a wrapped one. Couldn't figure out what it was until several amateur archaeologists pointed out to him, but it was in Turkey, and it was a terracotta pipe that was wrapped and buried in a very narrow form factor in the ground to achieve the same effect. So you don't have to run them out horizontally. You can run them vertically or any number of things. Take advantage of fissures in the ground, put the pipe in there, and then bury the buggers. As long as they have constant contact with the lower ground, and that lower ground is sufficiently insulated, you know, 10 or 12 feet if that's your area, then you're good to go. So, they really do shine. These, heating, cooling, piping systems, really do, work very, very well for, high temperature areas. Much more so than, up here in the Northwest, where we're going to have moderate temperatures all the time, and the delta will be reasonably moderate, good and bad. So we won't get as much of a benefit as the extreme cold and extreme hot areas. But nonetheless, I suspect we'll get enough benefit out of this to reduce my propane cost, I'm hoping, by about as much as 80%. So we'll see. We're going to keep track of it. I've got an accurate record of propane use these last couple of years to heat this place. So we have a nice little test bed here, and we're going to run that through. We've got a couple of other inventions that we're working on at the moment. One of which we're going to see if we can't set a webcam up on reasonably soon, maybe October, November. It's going to depend on finances and whether or not we can get the corporate egregious offenders to pay their fair share on the reports, in which case then we can afford to get the equipment, set the webcams up, and be able to maintain the costs on them. So, you know, if we can make this work, we'll be able to expand some of our activities here and take advantage of and participate in some of the creativity explosion that's happening around the planet. I guess that's about it. I had an interesting adventure the other day. Went out and looked at a very old used Japanese tractor. One of our needs here is to have some mobile mechanical digging and lifting capability. Anyway, it dawns on me, of course, and I had to take my Geiger counter along with me, since it was from Japan, although it has been here for 7 years. So other than the small amount of increase in radioactivity due to, you know, the thing thumping and burning diesel. You know, if you have a Geiger counter, you can check your microwave. The inside of your microwave oven will also be slightly hotter, and you know, engines are always slightly more radioactive than background. But no, this one was clean. Wasn't able to get it. Somebody got there. It was a good deal. They got there ahead of me. But anyway, hell of a planet here. You know, if you're buying anything, heavy equipment or metallic or ceramic from any source that may have Japanese sourced materials in it, you need to take that into account if it's not been in the country since pre-Fukushima. Just an interesting aside. It kind of took Kale aback when he understood what was going on and why the rad meter was along for the trip on this. I think that's about it. We hope to really, as this report comes on out. Oh, by the way, I'm really enthralled with all of the Spacecoat farts, but I'm a information, but I'm a sucker for that. But some really cool stuff in there this time. There's just some really good stuff in here. We couldn't not release the info. We just needed to figure out a way to do it in such a way that we get paid for the work. You know, I mean, I've got, well, I won't go into it. That's all personal stuff anyway. But we're at a situation where there's good news in there for people. There's a few cautions. Things are shifting. Everybody's aware of it. The shift is in the air on its way to the accelerator. And we'll just see how it goes. But we'll have the report out. We won't. We'll announce that we've emailed it, so you'll know that it's out. So in other words, if you were to get approved for an application and we approved it and took your money and put you on an email list and say that we mailed it out on, you know, August umpteenth, well, then on August umpteenth, we would go ahead and put a notice on the site, hey, we mailed it out this morning. And if you didn't get a copy, you know, check your email, check your spam filters, see if you've had any bounce backs. And if not, get back hold of us. On the bounce backs, we'll try sending from another domain to get around that. There's been less of them. I'm starting to get all this stuff fixed up. We'd had a... Yeah, I won't go into that either. No point. Anyway, so we're sort of good to go. And we hope to do some expansive stuff. There's we're marching into the Renaissance here. And it's going to just be cool as hell over these next few months. Amidst all the chaos and the other crap. Which we're just not going to allow to affect us. Looks like a good grape harvest, if any of the wine guys care, in some areas, and abysmal in others. So there's going to be a real shortage in some food commodities, and it's going to make an impact on some of the markets and stuff. Just a freebie. I don't know if anybody's into it. I don't drink. I don't consume alcohol. But I like eating grapes, and I like... the process of putting all the bacteria to work to make wine, even though I don't do anything with it. But I came across the information about the grape harvest in the report, and that, so this is one of those weird years where it'll just be a terrible year for the wine industry, but at some point in the future, because of the, nature of the environment this year, we'll end up with, one of those special years for wine. I don't know which kinds or any of that kind of crud. The data long-term set has this thing basically saying that 2013 is just going to be one of those years. You know, really, really piss poor harvest in a lot of places, but those that have a harvest will just have spectacular product. So, you know, good luck to all the wine drinkers. Actually, good luck to all of us. And that's the end of this. We'll let you know how to apply for the applications. It'll be posted on our site over the next day or so. And it's going to be a pain in the ass to all of us, but we just don't have any other way around it. Sorry about that.